It's time for Midweek Tech, episode 22, recorded on the 7th of November, 2012. Hello everyone, you're very welcome to Midweek Tech. This is episode 22 today, recorded on the 7th of November 2012. I am your host, Michael McAndrew, and today I am joined by the one, the only. What's her name? What's the name of that cat?
Major Singe Toffee Splat.
Right.
Would you like me to explain the name?
Sure.
Or is that so Major, because he commands everything since he was a little kitty, because he's a spoiled little one, and
okay.
Fluffy, well, Singed, I'll move on to, because he constantly burns himself off candles. Fluffy, because when he was small, his hair was still about this size, so his hair was about twice the size of him. And Splat, because that's the noise he makes when he jumps off high things, which he does a lot.
Right, so it's a creative name.
You might remember this cat from a long while ago.
I do. Unfortunately, he's back.
He was about 2 months old then. He was tiny. And now
Unfortunately, I do remember that cat, so...
Yeah, that was an interesting episode. The cat was on my face a lot. If you can't remember, I had difficulty talking.
I remember that one well. That was one of the more memorable episodes of Midweek Tech. So today's topic is a topic on the history of space. So this is a topic that, well, not the history of space, sorry, space technology, okay? Because really, without technology, we wouldn't be able to make it into space at all. So I think that
well, we can't fly.
No, we wouldn't. We wouldn't be able to make it into space without technology. So I want to talk a bit about the history of space technology, starting off with computers. The computers that were in the Apollo guidance computer. So the Apollo guidance computer was used in the lunar lander. So it's, you know, it had a 16-bit word length.
Yeah. By the way, guys, the thing we're talking about here isn't some amazing space computer. Your phone is probably more powerful than it.
Definitely, yeah. It had a 15 data bits and a parity bit. Now, what is a parity bit? It's also known as a check bit. And it's a bit that you add to the computer to sort of make sure that the bits are either an odd number or an even number. Right.
So, pardon? What can you be other than an odd number and an even number?
You could be a decimal.
Is that... Okay,
right, so
fair
you
enough.
You could be a floating...
How would there be a decimal? In... What are we talking about, like...
Computers. So it's bits. It's in bits.
Oh, bits is in... You're confusing me here. What are we actually talking about?
Well, basically it was...
Trying to carry on this conversation. I'm too tired.
We're talking about the Apollo guidance computer. Basically, it was a very, very slow computer. And it was used to control the lunar module. That was what it was actually used for. So,
and you were explaining the various different types of cores that we don't use.
I wasn't, no. But
I'm confused. I'm lost. I give up.
Anywho. So, you know, the computer technology that was there at the time to get the... I'm just trying to talk about the moon landing, you know, and the Apollo missions. The technology behind that mission was shocking when you think about it. I mean, the technology was really very poor. Now, for the time, it was, you know, cutting edge, but
For our time, cutting edge is what their equivalent was, you know.
It's amazing that they ever made it. You know, really, because with the technology that they had at the time.
Well, I mean, in all fairness, they had it planned out brilliantly, and their understanding of physics wasn't that appalling. In fact, when we're talking about space travel, it rivaled what we know today. And really all they needed was propulsion to get to the moon. The fact that they managed to maneuver it is quite fantastic, but at the same time, you know, well, it's a lot easier with things computing and navigating your course. You can still do it pretty easily if you just have skilled pilots and people that know what they're doing. I think it was more a case of actually knowing it than having hundreds of calculations.
Saying pretty easy is something that... Yeah, but you see, you need to be able
pretty
to...
Pretty easy if you spent, like, 10 years training on it.
Okay, yeah, pretty easy. Yeah, but that's difficult. So, right. You know, the technology behind that at the time was really amazing because back in, 1967...
Hell yeah.
1969. The first personal computer hadn't been invented. So the computer technology back then was, I mean, like the computers, let's say this iPhone 5. The computers were way underpowered, or they had way less power than this iPhone 5. Way less power. Like, this has I'm trying to put this in perspective, but it had like no power in comparison to the modern smartphones today.
I think it was something in relation to I remember hearing something. It's something like the tenth of a power of a power of one of the modern kind of algebraic calculators we have.
Yes. Yes, that's about the amount of power it had. But that tells you what you can do with such a limited amount of power, I suppose. When you think about it.
As I said before, it was more a case of the physics involved in it, I would think, rather than having to have hundreds of things to, you know, maneuver you about the place. If you just had things to pre-plot the course and set off the rocket like a projectile on a pre-plotted course, you know, understanding this, that, and the other, wind direction, so forth. I think you wouldn't need that much to navigate you and to keep you in check, so long as your pilots were trained and so forth.
Right. Now, it's so amazing how nowadays we have really, really powerful computers, but in comparison to back then, but we still complain about our computers being underpowered and things like that. So, you know, and to me...
People are saying they can't get on the live stream. They're saying it's just stuck staying loading.
I will look into that. So, like, do you find your computer fast?
Which one?
Like, any of them.
I find, I mean, the desktop I built that's ridiculously bloody powerful, I find that pretty, you know, fast. But then again, I don't feel it's a very fair comparison. If we're talking about the kind of PC a normal person or the average man would have, you can relate it to my laptop, which I would find fast enough if I take off all the fancy visual elements that are trying to be something they aren't. I mean... Oh, thanks, Jay. Jay's just telling me that my cat is adorable. My baby. But, you know, I still, in regard to what we're saying, I mean, if a calculator, an algebraic calculator, is like 10 times more powerful than what we're talking about, I'm sure we can't actually compare it to anything else. Because, you know, put it this way, the standard laptop, right? This has a pretty small processor, and it's a dual core, 1.3 gigahertz. And 1.3 gigahertz, put that in perspective for those of you who don't know, is 1.3 million calculations a second.
Yeah.
Putting that out there, right? And what would you say was the clockage, relative clockage of the machinery used in the first lunar landing?
I wouldn't know. Maybe 50 megahertz, if you're lucky.
50 megahertz would be about 50,000 a second. So it's, 1.3 million in a laptop over there, and like,
I wouldn't even say it's 50 megahertz. I'd say
I
way
mean,
less, I'd
like,
say actually.
well, we'll call it 10
Yeah,
megahertz,
10 megahertz.
and 10,000 in a bloody spaceship. Your choice.
Yeah. But I think that software is kind of inefficiently using the power of our computers today.
Well, yes, but of course that's very true, but still, you can't compare the two. I mean, sure, on its own, hold on, let me get up Task Manager here and we can work this out properly. Alright, Control-Alt. Go on. It is actually pretty slow for the software it's running this laptop, but it's alright, it does me. CPU usage with Skype and the internet browser on and so forth is still only about 50%. So I still running everything I'm running at the moment have say 6,500,000 calculations to be made a second, whereas at peak capacity, we'll say the machinery used in the lunar landings would have maybe what a practical 10,000 calculations a second.
Yeah.
And while that may sound like a lot, when I say calculations, I mean we're talking ASCII binary, kind of on off one and zero.
Right,
You
and you're gonna
mean,
need a lot of those.
yeah. I mean, to put that in perspective, that's just so ridiculously slow. I mean, the first personal computers that were made with like, 300 megahertz processors.
Yeah.
And
Well,
well, that's a bit of a stretch, maybe.
yeah,
I
a
don't
little bit
quite remember
less
the
than
exact
that.
figures, but still, you know what I'm saying. It's just so slow in comparison to anything else we have.
Yeah.
I mean, people think, wow, that's pretty slow, it's pretty old. They don't have a clue. I mean, Michael, can you tell us what the machinery on the lunar landing was on the lunar landing was even for?
Okay, so there was a beacon.
A beacon, of course.
There was a beacon for letting you know the position, and that would only come on at the it was on before the final stage of the landing because they had to preserve power. Okay, then there was your guidance computer, so that actually allowed you to control the lander. Now it did most of the stuff itself. It was mostly automated, so. It kind of controlled the amount of, trust that was being given to the lander and etc., things like that. So that was what that lunar lander actually, or the guidance computer actually did.
So really, that's having said that, that's some pretty complex material.
Yeah, no, it
That
is
if you
something
think about
that
it,
it's something you wouldn't want to
a
get
guidance
wrong.
system would be these days would be pretty complicated, and even back then, a guidance system would have involved some quite complicated stuff. It's not easy, and doing this on something that's maybe 10 megahertz would be painstaking. I can't imagine how they did it and how they ensured it was safe with that kind of
Yeah.
processing power behind what they were relying their astronauts' lives on.
Yeah, you
If you
definitely
think
wouldn't want to
about
get
it,
that wrong.
it is definitely a very interesting endeavor they had.
So I want to move on to what I'm really interested in space, and that is the technology in space, and that's satellites.
Ah, yes.
I'm really interested in how, satellites work. And the first satellite was launched by the US called Telstar, and that was actually used to it was like the first satellite television system. So it allowed you to, for
And that's how
example,
America
send
ruined the world, kids.
it was designed for US television to be sent like across the Atlantic to Europe. That's what they used it for. And so it was the first satellite ever in space. And now they use satellites for your satellite TV. Like, I have satellite TV here. You know, I think satellite TV is great because you probably wouldn't be able to get TV if you didn't in remote areas if you didn't have satellite TV. So that's what they use. Yeah.
Michael knows about living in remote areas, people. Michael basically lives in the middle of the country.
I do, yes. Yeah. Bad internet. You
what's
know.
What was your internet again? What's the internet you're hosting this entire live stream on?
Well, I have a download of about 6 megs. But that doesn't really matter for the live stream because the upload is what matters for that. And that's about 200 to 300 kilobits per second. Now, your average, your high quality audio file that you would download from, let's say, iTunes or someplace or off a CD would be about 256 kilobits per second. Okay? So I have less than that to work with to stream video and audio. So I have to stream about what am I doing? I think I'm doing about 96 kilobits is per second is my audio, and then the rest I just have left to video. I'm surprised I can get such good quality results.
Extremely optimized to do something like that.
Yeah, I had to mess around with it so much, and being honest with you, now I just don't touch anything because I might, you know, mess it up and then you'll have a bad live stream. But that's what I have to work with now. But better than what they had back in the day with the old modems and you're dialing up to the internet.
Well, yeah, it would be a bit of a nightmare running a podcast and then getting cold.
Definitely would be, yes.
Shut down the podcast, go take the phone.
Yeah, so you have a number of different satellites. You've got your CompSats. They're used for, you know, live via satellite in Southeast Asia or someplace, you know, in the middle of nowhere. Via satellite, we've got,
yeah,
you know, on the
places that nobody knows about.
On the US news television networks, you might have correspondents reporting on something, and they'll say live via satellite. Satellite uplink is extremely expensive using the CompSats, and the reason why is because you have to get a satellite up there in the first place, and so as a result, you have to you know, pay back the cost of the satellites. So satellite uplink can cost a lot of money. There's also a lot of latency issues, as you could probably, you'd be able to figure, because it's going up to a satellite from one location, then has to go down through the satellite to your other location where you'll be broadcasting. So there's going to be latency there.
Would you reckon that's what they use when they're corresponding to various different countries?
That is exactly,
you know, the way, you know, the way all of their reporters are like, I'm here with blah blah blah,
yeah,
what do you think on blah blah blah, and they're waiting there for 10 seconds.
Yes.
And you're just like, is this some kind of awkward silence between newscasters? Did something go on between these two? Or
they're using satellite uplink, so there's a delay between the time, you know, the message sent. Now, a lot of people, or a lot of news networks, are using Skype now.
Haha.
Which is, that's something that's really cool. They're using a consumer product. Oh my god. So.
Holy moly.
I know, yeah.
The world's coming to the end when the newscasters are using consumer products.
That's how news networks get such good.
Advertising has collapsed in on itself.
Yeah. I mean, a satellite uplink is crazy expensive. It's like $1,000 a minute or something. So you could imagine they'd want to be cutting the interviews fairly short on those. So, you know, Skype is a really good option because, you know, audio quality or video quality is pretty good as long as you have somewhat good internet connection. Now, that's how they actually get such good quality from the satellite uplink, is, you know, because it's through satellite uplink. You can send, I'd say you could send up to 1,000 kilobits per second through the Well, you could actually technically send up to about 3,000 kilobits per second.
In theory.
Yeah, but the problem is you get latency. So, you know, when you're watching your HD satellite television, you're getting about 3,000 kilobits per second, right? Now, you know, there's no issue in sending that. The only issue is you're going to get latency. That doesn't matter if you're just watching TV, but if you're trying to do a two-way
Do safe
conversation,
space or
if you're trying to do a two-way conversation, the latency is going to be a big issue. So realistically, it's about 1,000 kilobits per second. Right, you've also got Earth observation satellites. They're like the satellites that they have large cameras fitted to them for taking
big
photos.
cameras. You just see like an actual camera, just like a SLR or something, just taped to a satellite.
It could be
Some
that
guy up there, who hasn't eaten for three
your
months,
Canon
just taking
5D Mark II.
pictures.
Yeah, so
Some guy up there
they
with a BlackBerry doing duck face. How about that, man? Don't lick my face. Come on.
so you've
Not
got
you, Michael. It's all right.
so they use thing they
Climbing
they use high quality cameras to take photographs of the Earth for Google Maps, Apple Maps, even.
Well, actually, Apple Maps is really just C3 Technologies. They already have all the map. They already have all the data.
Yeah, but the you know the satellite view that's actually photographs taken by satellites. So,
Is this
you've
so
also
great?
got satellite navigation. So, what happens is to find GPS location. This is
Oh,
why.
Owen brought up a very interesting point there, actually. US Navy SEALs Apple Maps.
They don't use
Working
Apple
in
Maps, do they?
cooperation. Yeah, for the win.
Really?
Apparently. Yeah, apparently.
Okay.
Amazingly.
Because I used Apple Maps last week, and I was being honest with you, a bit disappointed. I share the anger of Apple Maps now, and I'll tell you why. Because I went to a hotel, and I wanted to look up the location of the hotel because I wanted to get directions there, and I looked it up, and there was a cloud covering it, and it was split into three sections. It was like three different photographs. One section was clouded, the other one was in black and white, and then the other one was like a blur. So it was very funny.
No, you should switch 3D mode. The 3D cities are absolutely astounding.
Well, yeah,
They're really
they're pretty
fast.
good. You do have a lot of artifacting, but yeah, they are pretty good. But you know, 3D cities,
Render
you.
quality is absolutely amazing considering what it is.
Yeah, it is. But you know,
Ow!
you only get that in major cities. So you wouldn't get that anywhere in Ireland, unfortunately.
That's a shame. They need to work on that. They really do.
So anyway, satellite
I'd say if
navigation.
every town had it, it would be a hit technology.
It would. So satellite navigation, how does it work? You've got satellites in the sky, and they tr you're so depending on how many satellites are in your area, you know, in range, you can get your GPS location. Now, you need a minimum of about, I'd say you could do it on three or four satellites. It's like trying to get the center of gravity of something. So the more points you have, the more accurate your center of gravity is going to be. So if you said, let's say you had three satellites trying to pinpoint your GPS location, it's not going to be that accurate. Whereas if you had 10 satellites trying to pinpoint your location, it's going to be a lot more accurate. And that's why I'm worried about the you know, cars, the or the automated cars. They use GPS technology. Let's say you went down to about four satellites, you know, trying to pinpoint your GPS location. You're going to definitely lose accuracy dramatically. So I would probably be worried about that. Now, it's probably what it does anyway on Google Maps is if you're close to a road,
Get a start.
even though it might think that the location of, let's say you're in the car and you're driving, even though it might think that the location of where you are is about, let's say, 50 meters away from the road, it will detect the road and it'll say, oh, you're on a road, right? So I think that's what they're doing with the Google automated cars and things like that. That's what they'd have to do, because GPS is not that accurate.
They can't just have a GPS and just have, you know, this is a road, because if they get it 1 degree off, you'll be driving through farmland in no time.
That is true. And also, you know, you'll have to watch the curb and things like that. So there's definitely a lot of things that could go wrong there. And that's why those automated cars are illegal in a lot of states.
Wait, can you actually buy consumer automated cars?
No, you can't. But Google are not allowed. No, but Google aren't allowed to use their automated cars, like test them on public roads in certain in most states. There's certain states you can use them, which is kind of crazy, but I suppose anything for science and technology. Yeah, that's why, like, I have experience trying to find out the speed of a vehicle through GPS, and that doesn't, like, it's not accurate, really.
Michael, have you seen Google is a Hungry Beast yet?
I have not.
It's basically highlighting some of the crazy, crazy investments Google have made. Did you know Google have invested in DNA storage, have invested in public access to people's medical records, have invested in, you know,
that is
over. They've basically invested in everything, biotechnology. They've invested in everything that could possibly become big in the future for hope of getting rich off something, which, you know, in theory is a very good idea, but it's kind of scary. They seem to want information about everything. They're trying to build the world's biggest library as well.
Holy moly. Google are definitely seizing the opportunity, as they say.
Seizing the opportunity, quote unquote.
So, believe it or not, you know how, you know, they recently launched a Mars rover known as Curiosity? The US did. Well, there have been many, many rovers before that, I can assure you. Starting off with the Mars 2, launched by the USSR in 1971, and along with the Mars 3 rover by the USSR in 1971, they also the USA launched in 1997, I'm not sure how to pronounce this, the Sojourner or something rover. And then in 2003, the USA launched Spirit. And in 2003, the USA also launched Opportunity, the Opportunity rover. And then in 2012, they launched Curiosity. So the technology...
Michael, one of our viewers has a question.
Okay.
What happened to Mars 1?
Yeah. Yeah, probably.
I never thought of that. Why is it called the Mars 2 exactly?
I don't know, but it's probably because they forgot to count in one.
Send
maybe
the Mars run.
Maybe they destroyed Mars 1 by accident.
Interesting. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, you know, there's a few things that they may have done to Mars 1.
What, of guns and explosives or
possibly
what?
Mars 1 might have been a test rover.
Did they just get like frustrated or what? Were they like, why won't you work, and just hit it with a couple of knives?
Maybe.
Oh, I see.
they did the old give a whack to the TV type thing. Yeah,
give a whack to the TV with, you know, a 20 grand Mars rover. That's clever. Well done.
Not 20 grand. A couple of million.
Well, really, the original Mars rover, would you say? 20
well,
million investment?
Well, yes, because nowadays it would probably be worth about a fiver in technology. But, yeah, probably at the time, because, you know, it was cutting-edge technology, it would have cost millions to make one of these rovers. So, I went to, I suppose, a talk by Leo Enright. Do you know Leo Enright? He's a journalist for RTE and a number of different... He makes appearances in BBC as well. He reports on space. and he's one of the journalists, you know, in with NASA, I suppose. What he does is he gets all the stories from NASA. So any updates on the Curiosity rover, he'll get them first. He'll be one of the first people to get them.
That's
so,
a pretty awesome job.
It is actually a pretty awesome job. Very awesome job. He also did all the commentary on every space launch since the moon launch in 1969. So he's got a lot of experience in space. And he was just showing us the portrait of the Curiosity rover. So it took its, he called it Facebook profile picture. And what it did was it took its robotic arm out, fully stretched, and took a picture of itself. It's a really amazing image. It's taken with an extremely high-definition camera. And so the Mars Curiosity rover has a lot of technologies in it, new technology. It's got a nuclear battery.
Oh, Jesus, really?
Yeah.
I'd heard a lot about the Curiosity, but...
Yeah, it's got a nuclear battery.
A nuclear battery.
And it lasts 14 years. 14 years is what it lasts. And it actually emits a beta radiation. So that's actually a radiation that is a lot easier to contain. You could probably contain it with cardboard.
Lord.
They're probably, you know, still putting it in a lead container just for safety, but you could contain that beta radiation with cardboard, which is very safe. And it'll last up to 14 years, which is really amazing, you know.
Really is.
So there's been a lot of new technologies put into this rover. Really, really amazing technologies at that, that I find very, very interesting. So... I think that now he
was kitten. No, get away from there.
He was so Leo Enright was talking about how the next journey for the lunar lander. It's actually going, or not the lunar lander, the Mars rover. It's going up a mountain, and we looked at the picture and it looked like a little bit of a hill. And he explained that where it's going is about three times the size of the Cliffs of Moher. So it's absolutely huge. And that's just the first leg of the journey. So it's going right up to the top. It's probably a lot higher than Mount Everest.
Where's it plan on going?
Sorry?
Where's it plan on going?
It's going right up to the top. So it's going to be taking rock samples as it goes along and, you know, material samples. And it's going to go right to the top of the mountain. And then they hope that it won't fall.
If the mountain's about three times the size of the Cliffs of Moher,
that's just to get like to the base of the mountain.
Are we talking? I presume we're not talking about Mount Olympus here, no?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
But it's huge. It's really huge. Right. So it's a huge endeavor for the Mars rover to go.
Bet you NASA are breaking out the caviar. Bit of a big success, sir.
Yeah, Leo Enright was saying that they're definitely very happy. No one thought it was going to work.
Wow,
no one thought
nice.
That the $8 million Mars rover was going to work. So, thank God it did. Thank God it did.
Well, I mean, put it this way, $30 billion is spent by 3 weeks by the American Army, and they can't spare $8 million for the space program?
Right, I know. It's, what is it, $4 billion a year is their budget?
Meanwhile, their military is something like $3 trillion, if I remember.
It is, yeah. It's about
which is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. But anyway... That's a discussion for maybe never.
This
is a technology show. Like we can.
It is a technology show, but, you know, we could turn it into a general intellectual show. We could speak about this, that, and the other that cool people like us speak about. We could speak about, like, alpacas or other interesting subjects of interest. But, I mean, I don't know. I think it would be fitting after Obama's been re-elected into the White House again for a second term.
Well, I don't really. I'm not interested really in that. I want to take a quick break.
I
want to take a quick break to talk about the Amazon affiliate link that we have at Talks About Tech. So all you have to do is go to talksabouttech.com/Amazon, and that will bring you to the amazon.co.uk website. All you have to do is continue doing your shopping and check out, and we get a small commission from that. And that helps us here at Talks About Tech to get new equipment, like pay off these microphones that I just purchased a little while ago. I'm also hoping on getting a compressor limiter gate, which is a very fancy piece of equipment for the sound here to make it more balanced, because I've been realizing that every episode, you know, I'll be moving away from the microphone, I'm moving towards the microphone, so my audio is fluctuating so much. And that is an issue if you want to actually listen to the show.
You want to listen to the show and not watch it.
I don't think it'll make much of a difference. You have to listen to watch. So, you know, use our Amazon affiliate link if you're shopping on Amazon. Just don't forget us, because it really helps us out here, you know, to get... Like, I was looking at the new TriCaster 40. The TriCaster is a system, a video production system, and it's like... I just looked at it and I was like, I want one. I really want one.
You just want everything. You just want everything ever.
Well, who doesn't want everything ever? But
I don't know. Actually, I'd be pretty pissed off if I had everything ever. That would be really boring.
Yeah, it would be. It would be. I don't want everything ever. There's only one thing I want.
You say that now.
Yeah, next week there'll be something else, and then the week after. No, I used to want to get everything, but I'm pretty good now. I'm pretty good. Like, I don't.
I nearly have everything.
You're funny. You were. I don't have everything. Oh, hang on.
I just have most of it. I just have most of everything.
Anyway, I want to talk about the International Space Station.
He's in there hiding his elephant in the closet.
I want to talk about the International Space Station. Is this the first step to living in space?
I don't think so.
Why is that?
I mean, I suppose you could call it like a very pre-alpha step to living in space, but living in space will present a lot of long-term health difficulties. The kind of long-term health difficulties that astronauts at the moment are experiencing on the International Space Station. They can't stay more than about 4 months, you know that?
Yeah.
In the space station. And, I mean, it's basically unlivable conditions.
I wouldn't say it's unlivable conditions now.
Unlivable conditions for civilians, definitely.
Well, you do have to exercise a lot more, and the reason being is because the lack of gravity, you know. It affects your...
Ow.
Metabolism, I suppose.
Away from me.
So you do have to exercise a lot more, but like there are difficulties. But it is definitely the first step to living in space, because they're finding these difficulties now and they're resolving these difficulties now. So why can they only live there for about 4 months? I do not understand.
I think bone degradation, but living in a zero-gravity condition. We are not made to live in a zero-gravity condition. The amount of health complications you could probably catch being in space like that, I think would be a rather large number, to put it frankly, Kitten, if you sit on that mouse. I just don't think, you know, we're not naturally meant to go into space, and that means that we're going to need a lot of technology to keep us alive up there. And the people who are up there are all, you know, ex-RAF, ex-this, that, and the other pilots. You know, all the astronauts are American pilots. You know, then we've got scientists, engineers, blah, blah, blah. All people who have been, all people who have been trained in being in space. Now, you're not going to spend all that money that they have spent training the people who are in the International Space Station on training each and every civilian who wants to go out and live in space, how to live in space. And it won't be very nice living conditions either at the moment. And I mean, I'm sure it's the, maybe perhaps you were right, sure, maybe it's the first step, but God, it's not something I would say that, you know.
I don't think the future of, you know, people living outside Earth is going to be, like, just floating, orbiting around Earth. I think it's going to be on different planets. Like, the moon, for example. Like, because, you know, there are gravity on other planets, it's, like, extremely unlivable conditions in Mars. It's very, very cold. Or is it very hot or cold? I can't remember.
Where?
Mars.
Mars is very cold at some points and very hot at some points.
How is that possible? How is that possible?
Atmosphere. For instance, there is sheet ice on the snow caps because they're not, the sun isn't hitting them properly. And then, of course, around the center, around the equator, the sun's hitting them full on with no atmosphere, which means that it's boiling.
But isn't Mars further away from the sun than Earth?
No.
It isn't.
I don't... Wow, that's pretty bad that we don't know that. No, I'm fairly sure it's... Jesus.
Okay. Anyway.
Orkies.
Like, but would technology make those, you know, planets livable?
You could do something called terraforming. And terraforming is the act of introducing an artificial climate into a planet. Now, I am a sci-fi person, and that's how I know all this nonsense. Now, to terraform is incredibly tricky and would require extensive machinery and a planet with the right gravitational pull. So, you know, you always could try and terraform a planet, but even then you wouldn't know what would happen to it. It would take hundreds and hundreds of years for any slight ecosystem to begin to grow.
Okay. Right.
So, you know, you could, but it wouldn't be practical in any way until we've improved our technology a huge amount.
Yeah. Well, they are developing air recycling systems, and that's how it works in the International Space Station. Now, you can only recycle air so much. That's the problem.
Infinite air.
Yeah, you can't really make infinite air, but you can definitely...
Recycle it a few times, see what comes out the other end.
Yeah.
Well, if you all choke in space, I'll be here on planet Earth until they figure out how to do this stuff properly. Have fun.
Right.
Have fun on the news.
The future of space travel. Yeah.
Travel, I feel that all advancements in space travel are basically going to halt for a while right now because of the price of oil. So we have to figure out hydrogen fuel cells or something, you know.
Okay, so we do need to... Now, we are, you know, currently developing other methods of energy other than fossil fuels.
Oh my God, that cat just climbed on the ceiling.
So... Okay. So what kind of fuels are you thinking of, you know, being able to bring us into the into space? What other kind of...
It was a very interesting concept.
How are you gonna do wind energy?
Oh God.
A big windmill on the space rocket.
Well, there was a very interesting theory for a spacecraft, which would basically involve, it's going to sound weird, blowing up nuclear fusion, outside a spacecraft and using it as propulsion. I know what that sounds like. But
that sounds like
to be quite a sustainable one, right? And it would also enable us to travel at nearly the speed of light without using unbelievable amount of energy.
Okay, yes, but what about the effects of the nuclear fusion outside the spacecraft? Be fairly
Everything outside
serious.
It in a close radius would be destroyed. I mean, I'm not sure how the engines would stop being damaged, but having said that, you know, space is never going to come too crowded. It's space. It's too big to be crowded.
Okay, but one of the major issues they have at the moment for satellites and the likes are space debris. The International Space Station has been damaged many times by space debris.
Development, like it's people weren't building with a plan. They weren't building to have satellites that are like eco-friendly and that will leave lots of space for people to land spaceship back onto Earth or fly spaceship out. They've just been shoveling satellites up there. Just satellites up here, satellites up there.
Well, you see, the thing is, it happened with Earth as well. It's like, the recycling thing never really came in until recently, because the whole attitude towards the Earth, it's a huge place. It doesn't matter if I just throw this paper on the ground. There's so much more space. It'll just, go off someplace. But if everybody does that, then it's going to build up. And that's what's happening in space as well. Everyone's like, space is huge. You know, we can just leave bits of debris in space. Yeah, and it will not affect it. It'll just float off into space and we'll never ever see it again. But in fact, it actually begins to orbit around the Earth. And then as you send more satellites up there, they get damaged from space debris, and then you have to go and you have to repair just because some astronaut left his toolbox out in space and forgot to bring it in back with him. And he says, I'll just leave it out there. It'll be fine. So
yeah, he says, I'll just leave it out there, it'll be fine. And then a spacecraft rams into it, loses a wing, and crashes naturally.
Yeah, you never really think that that would actually happen. But that has happened, So I think, what about privatized space travel?
Privatized space travel is going to take... It's probably actually, thinking about it, going to be quicker developing than government space travel, because governments just don't seem to have the time or.
Well, we are in recession, so...
And, put it this way, Virgin Media are already thinking about tourism to the moon, and the government hasn't done that, have they?
Well, that's not their main focus, because they have countries to run, that's the thing. And especially, the US government are a very...
Countries to run.
The US government are a very capitalist government. It's a capitalist country, so they're going to try and privatize everything anyway. So they'd be kind of more with the whole...
Let's not take things too far.
It's true.
They're capitalists doesn't mean they're going to privatize absolutely everything. For instance, they need the military to themselves.
But they were even thinking of privatizing the military at one point.
They did, yes. They very nearly passed a bill to privatize the military, but at the same time they didn't. They won't mind us to privatize everything, and I wonder if space travel would, be privatized immediately, or if it would take time.
Well, it's already being privatized.
Hmm?
It's already been privatized. You've privatized, private companies sending.
That's not really privatized. So that's not.
How isn't it?
all of America's. Yeah, sorry. That's not really dedicating all of America's space work. Blah blah blah. Space. What am I trying to say? Is space engineering and giving it over, turning it into a company.
No. What I'm saying is there are private space companies out there.
But Virgin Media can do what they want. If they can do what they want because they're their own company, without without any government permission, because they can get the technology themselves. And that doesn't mean that the government has to privatize them. The government can just, you know, leave them to whatever they want. And I'm sure they'll introduce some kind of space tax, which will make money off the privatized companies, you know. All's good, but I doubt they'll be privatizing all their space travel, all the government space travel, and anytime soon.
Okay. Well, Thaik, thanks very much for joining me on this episode of Midweek Tech. We had a great episode. I've only realized now that it's not the 24th of October, 2012, and it's not episode 21, but it's actually episode 22.
Oh, Lord.
So that's a big deal. It's a big deal, but sorry about that. I'll just won't show the double shot. Thank you very much, Thaik Wagstaff, for joining me.
You're very welcome.
Where can people find you?
People can find me Facebook, Thaik Scuba Science Wagstaff. I'll only add you if you look legit, or if I know you from somewhere, or if you send me a message and say, look, I saw your show, it was awesome, and, or, well, Michael's show, I saw you on Michael's show, and it was awesome, and I'll be like, oh, cool, I know this person, and then they'll be like, yay, and I'll be like, yay, and I'll add them. But, you can find me there, you can find me on Twitter, Thaik's Muffins. You can find me on YouTube, Thaik's Muffins. You can find me, you can email me, thaik@pictureandword.com. You can get me a lot of ways, but you can telekinesis, you know, whatever.
Okay, thank you, Thaik. Do not do the telekinesis thing. You can find me on Twitter, Talks About Tech. I post if, you know, there's a show going live or if a show is uploaded. I also, you know, post bits of information sometimes, or just post random stuff, really. You can check out the website, talksabouttech.com. You can email me, michael@talksabouttech. That's michael@talksabouttech .com. Talksabouttech.com is the email address. You know, if you just want to email me for any reason at all, if you want to say my podcast is rubbish or my podcast is great, I don't mind. Just, yeah.
Or you want to say, well, hey, that Thaik guy's awesome.
Yeah. I'd say a lot of people will be saying that. I can guarantee it to you.
Well, once we hit off, there'll be people coming from far and wide just to say how awesome and amazing I am.
Oh, yeah. I bet there will be.
Naturally. So,
okay. Anything else I want to add there? Yes, we do record this show live every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. What is it, GMT? It's not GMT anymore, is it? It's GMT plus one or something. It's still. I think it's still GMT because Greenwich Mean Time changes with the hour, you know. Anyway, yeah, it's GMT. Just, yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
There is a new time zone, though, so it mightn't be GMT as such. It might be GGGGGT or something. All right. Thanks, everyone, for watching or listening to this episode of Midweek Tech. And until next time, goodbye.